from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. At Reddit, they took down forums for fat shaming, racism, transgender attacks, and more. At Gawker, they killed a story on a private citizen who tried to hire a gay escort. At Ashley Madison, they lost control of a whole lot of data on people looking for extramarital affairs. The internet is having a hot new moment on free speech, privacy, decency, and boundaries. This hour on Point, should anything restrain information on the web? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you for Wild West or rein it in on the web? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me now from San Francisco is Davey Alba, staff writer for Wired. Her latest headline is "The Future of Reddit is the Future of the Internet." Oh, boy. You can find a link to it at our website. We should note for our listeners that Advance Publications owns a stake in Reddit and is also Wired's parent company. Davey Alba, welcome to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
With us from Washington is Timothy Lee. He covers technology for Vox. Tim Lee, welcome to On Point.
Hi there.
Davey, you say Gawker and Reddit are both kind of having unraveling moments here. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess when the internet was founded, it was founded to be this sort of decentralized open forum where anything goes, you know? And now these two sites who really wanted to embody that, Reddit and Gawker, they're facing this sort of reckoning as they're both more than a decade old now and trying to, as you said, find boundaries where, you know, their audience feels comfortable and where the audience actually is kind of demanding these boundaries.
Tim, we'll have people who use both of these and people who never have. They're not the same. Reddit, you can post almost anything on all kinds of sort of message boards or subreddits, they're called. Some of them very sort of ordinary, everyday, I don't know, crocheting, knitting, you name it. And others really kind of down and dirty. Reddit has closed some of those down. Gawker is more along a traditional publishing line, and that's where the tension came there, I guess, Tim.
Yeah, that's right. So Gawker has traditionally taken a very open attitude about what they'll publish, but everything that appears on Gawker is professionally written content, a traditional news organization in that sense. And recently, Gawker's founder, Nick Denton, has tried to shift the site into a more mainstream direction because, you know, when you attack absolutely everybody, including people who are not necessarily that prominent, it turns off advertisers, it turns off a lot of mainstream readers. And so if Gawker wants to grow and thrive as a business, it needs to build a large audience. It needs to be not necessarily make advertisers happy, but at least make them not too uncomfortable. And the current type of content they're putting out doesn't necessarily do that.
So maybe this is about principle. Maybe this is just about profit. Davey, can you walk us through the incident that got Nick Denton sort of hanging out there with his own staff? Two of his top editors quit at Gawker. What was it all about?
Yeah, well, it was basically this post that a lot of, you know, the internet really objected to. It was the purported outing of a Condé Nast executive. Most people thought that, you know, there was no necessarily, like, no news hook, really, or, you know, no real, I guess, public interest in that story.
Just a kind of a guy living in New York, and not even the top executive.
Right,
and he had tried, apparently, to hire a gay escort, and boom, the guy tried to blackmail him, I guess. And here's the whole story on Gawker. If they could do it to him, they could do it to anybody.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, this sparked an ongoing conversation online, and eventually, they took the post down, but it was actually Gawker management that sort of made this decision and cut out editorial. So there was a huge fallout from that. The editorial side really objected to that and wrote a post. And now they're kind of in this is unraveling really publicly that, you know, the editorial side feels like Gawker management crossed the line, and that those, you know, there should be a clear divide between, you know, management and editorial. And, you know, there was this, they're just trying to figure out what to do next. It's still unclear, but the two site leaders have resigned in the wake of all of this.
Tim Lee, as an old school news guy, I well understand that line between that wall, the Chinese wall we used to call it, between the publisher and the editor. On the other hand, as an old school news guy, the fact that they're publishing this kind of stuff about a private citizen says to me, by old school standards, what standards are you defending here? All you're doing is smearing somebody who is doing nothing illegal here. You're just, and furthermore, you're kind of participating in his effort to shake down the guy who wanted to hire him. Or editorial standards? Is that what this is really about?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think it's unfortunate that the way this is unfolded has really blurred those two different issues. I mean, it is important for reputable news organizations to have that separation. I think on the merits, this post just was not defensible. And I really think this all ultimately goes back to founder Nick Denton. I think he bears the lion's share of the blame here, because he created a culture at Gawker where this is the kind of post that people that Gawker writers
write. That was the way. That's how they made their name.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, another example of this is that they published a secretly recorded text of secretly recorded video of wrestler Hulk Hogan having sex. And again, there was absolutely no news. I mean, he is a public figure, but still, that was a private moment. There's absolutely no reason why a news organization should be publishing something like that. And they're now being sued by Hulk Hogan. They could end up having huge financial damage from that. And Nick Denton has really, their sort of motto is that anything that's true and interesting, we're going to publish. And that's not actually a good model. But that's how he trained his editorial staff to do it, and they're doing the job that he hired them to do. And now he kind of hasn't had their back when the business side of the organization objected to it.
And they're quitting, two top editors, in an uproar there. And Nick Denton, well, he's describing maybe a new way. There's this memo out from Denton, the founder of Gawker. He says he wants more humane guidelines. Some people may say that's rich coming from Denton. He laid down these tracks. And he put it in this memo, we need a codification of editorial standards beyond putting truths on the internet. Davey Alba in San Francisco, that's kind of a radical statement, however, coming from Denton or a lot of internet people. I mean, the whole thing with the internet was put up whatever's true out there, put it up, and let transparency be the name of the game. Now he seems to be walking away at some level from that.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. Gawker was founded in 2003, though, and, it was a very different time when that, at that point, the internet was very much like that. It was this sort of nerdy subculture, like a sidelight to our real lives, and now it's totally mainstream. And I think with the maturing of the internet and the maturing of the culture on the internet, there is this call for, more boundaries, more standards. Where do you draw the line? It's no longer this sort of subculture. It's totally mainstream, and we all are trying to think about that. And also sort of in the whole Reddit situation as well, there's a kind of reckoning there where they have to figure out, what sits well with the community and what kind of rules they're going to set. And it's hard. There's a lot of harassment on the internet, but also growing calls from the public to curb harassment and kind of have this, baseline of decency.
A baseline of decency and absence of harassment, those sound like tall orders on the web as it's come to be. But maybe that's the change. I mean, on Reddit, you had a bunch of complicated issues trying to have a stronger harassment policy. Plenty of harassment has, of course, gone on there over the years. Some of these message boards or posting areas, I was ticking them off earlier, but two were dedicated to fat shaming, one to transphobia, one to racism, one to harassing members of a progressive video game site, and the site permanently removed those forums in June. Plenty of issues there. And then we come to Ashley Madison. Tim, here, this is sort of a different kettle of fish, but you've got a website devoted to helping married people arrange extramarital sexual affairs, and they get hacked. And for a time, they say now that they've got all this data back, we'll see. But for a time, millions, they say they have 37 million registered users. I don't know how many of these their very personal information, credit card information, but also their sexual fantasies and chats out there, gone, hacked, maybe with some help from inside. And at that point, Tim, in the world of Gawker and Reddit and others as we've known them, no guarantee that that most private of stuff might not be all over the web.
Yeah, so I don't think if the hackers got this information, which it seems like they may have, I don't believe that Ashley Madison would have been able to get that back. So it very well might still be out there. And what the hackers are doing, apparently, is they're trying to basically blackmail Ashley Madison into shutting down their site, which, you know, it's a
because they think it's immoral.
Because not that hacking is that immoral either. I mean, there's nobody's really covering themselves in glory in this.
Yep.
But yeah, they're trying to basically blackmail Ashley Madison into shutting down, and Ashley Madison hasn't complied with that. We'll see if that was a bluff or not. It seems like either they aren't going to follow through with it, or maybe they didn't have as much data as they said they would. I think one of the lessons of this is that when you put information on the internet, it's really impossible to be sure that you'll keep control of it. I mean, companies put a lot of effort into security, and especially this company, before this hack, they had talked about how their privacy is really important for obvious reasons, and they've taken really extreme steps to make sure that customers are protected. And obviously, that wasn't good enough. So you really want to think twice anytime you put something on the internet that you wouldn't want the public to see. You really want to think carefully about who you're entrusting it to and whether it's really something you're comfortable with.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about free speech, about privacy, about decency, about where the internet is headed after blow-ups at Reddit and Gawker and the hacking of Ashley Madison. Tim Lee is with us. He covers technology for Vox, joins us today from Washington. Davey Alba is with us from San Francisco, staff writer there for Wired, and with us from the West Coast. You can join us as well. Yeah, Ashley Madison is joined. It's a owned by a company out of Toronto, but they've got a couple of others along the line. They help people who want to arrange affairs find one another. They've also got Cougar and Established Men. They say they've got all this data back under control now, but who knows? Here was a 2009 online dating. This is an ad that they had prepared for the Super Bowl. NBC blocked the commercial. Shows a couple out on a date. You'll get the idea.
Hello? No, I'm not busy.
Have you ever found yourself on a really bad blind date? Now imagine that date lasting the rest of your life.
Crap, I have to go. Happy anniversary, honey.
Isn't it time for AshleyMadison.com?
Okay, for some people, Ashley Madison, the tagline is "Life is short, have an affair." Some people found that indecent, and apparently we're involved in hacking of Ashley Madison here. A lot of information got out. Who knows if it's back in Reddit? Lots of tough stuff over the years. 2012, CNN interviewed the famous, infamous Reddit troll, troublemaker Michael Brouch, better known as Violent Acres, then a 49-year-old software engineer who created several controversial forums on Reddit, including one featuring sexually suggestive photos of teenagers and one specifically for rape jokes. He told CNN he felt bad about his behavior there.
I have made mistakes. I understand that, you know, Reddit encouraged and enabled this sort of behavior, and I shouldn't have been a part of it. Nobody on Reddit really had anything to say about it at all.
Violent Acres is stepping off of his high arc of outrage there. But whether this really changes, whether there's a moment where the internet ethic is changing under principled pressure or profit pressure, that's what we're looking at. On Facebook, Paul writes to us, Davey, Tim, he says, you can always block, ignore, or avoid people and content you find offensive. Censoring it seems counterintuitive to the spirit of the internet and what it represents. Davey, there you are in San Francisco, kind of home turf for the web. Is this censorship to try and bring some baseline of decency, as you say?
That's a really hard question to answer. And, you know, one of the issues that's being debated a lot with Reddit is this sort of issue of anonymity and whether that's actually a good or bad thing.
Among the people posting whatever they like, including very outrageous stuff.
Mm-hmm. So it's not attached to your real name. And that sort of, you know, lets people have this sort of unfettered free speech on this forum. And yeah, it's you know, it's a hard problem because free speech is valuable. I wouldn't say that all of Reddit is, you know, sort of spreading bad ideas. Some of the most creative discussion actually happens on Reddit, and some of the community is really vibrant and creative and talks about all sorts of weird hobbies and things that people are really, you know, passionate about. So, you know, on the issue of censorship, it's sort of they have this tagline that they say they're going to ban behavior, not ideas. And that's a blurry thing to enforce. They've, you know, shuttered subreddits that actually sort of, they say, encourage harm of women, but they've let ideas of, you know, racism, those, the subreddits that kind of discuss those things, stay open. So, by that light, it's sort of, you would think that there, it's not a complete censorship. Also, as you know, on the internet, you can migrate from one platform to another. So a lot of people are actually, you know, coming off Reddit and going to this other platform called Vote. That's supposed to, you know, outright censorship is something like the government saying on all channels, this cannot happen. This discussion cannot take place. On the internet, though, there it's sort of, you know, outlets everywhere. So it's, I wouldn't say that this crosses a line of censorship necessarily, although, of course, you can debate the nuances of every single, like, subreddit, and that gets closed. And that's sort of what's happening now. The interesting thing is, you know, Reddit itself as a community is really run by these moderators, which I don't think a lot of people are aware of. Moderators keep Reddit open and enforce the rules and everything. And the thing that management is trying to do right now is to give these moderators tools to better wrangle the 164 million monthly active users on Reddit. It's really hard because, you know, you're trying to keep your subreddit safe and discussion free. But if a whole wave of people come in and, you know, have an agenda or something, then you do need those tools. You need those tools to figure out how you're going to handle those things. You know, these moderators are unpaid. They do it because they are passionate about, you know, the subreddit that they're moderating. And we'll see how that goes. You know, they right now the site leaders have promised these tools that are coming out in a few months, around 6 months for some of them. And some moderators are really holding them to that. They've created timers on their
tools to help them rein in a conversation if it gets too,
violent
or harassing. Of course, the whole idea of handling information on the web, some people always saw that as antithetical to the web. I mean, Tim, we've got these older ideas of editorial control or government censorship. Now the word censorship being applied to sort of editorial discretion in these sites where people aren't accustomed to it. There has been another ethic, of course, Tim, this old transparency ethic, which says, look, these days with the web, information's going to be out there. Let go of your old ideas of privacy, maybe even decency. Whatever is will be on the web, and get used to it.
Well, so I think it's important here to draw a distinction between the internet as a platform and individual websites, individual publishers. You know, when I read the Gawker story about that executive, I did it with my Verizon Fios connection. And theoretically, you could say, well, Verizon should somehow be stopping that information. But they don't, because everybody understands that they're a provider of
infrastructure. They're a conduit.
Yeah, they're a conduit. And so that ethic that the internet should be uncensored, that if people really want to get access to information, to share information, they should be allowed to, nobody's really attacking that idea. Anybody can set up a website and put up all sorts of salacious information. The law protects the hosts, the providers of those services from legal liability for things that are put up without their knowledge. Gawker and to a large extent Reddit are in a different category, where certainly with Gawker, these are paid employers of Gawker who are choosing to put particular pieces of content on. And I think it's totally legitimate to hold those employees responsible for what they do. And in particular, Gawker has built a large audience. There are people who come to Gawker to see what Gawker's writers have come up with, what information they want to publish. And so that gives Gawker a lot of power in the way that a random Reddit commenter doesn't have power. And I think it's appropriate to hold people who have that kind of a power to a different standard than random people on the internet who don't have an audience and can't use this giant megaphone to reach millions of people.
It's a pretty gnarly bunch of issues intersecting here. I want to go on just a moment to Neil Richards from Washington University in St. Louis, who's been thinking about this. A couple callers first. Margie first in Middleborough, Massachusetts. Margie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Tom, and hello to your guests. Mm-hmm. My comment has to do with something I thought of as soon as Ms. Albert made her opening remark. And I heard you echo this maybe about 10 minutes back, I think, Tom, something similar, that the Internet was founded for the idea of this democratically getting all the information out there all the time without censorship. I don't know if I'm paraphrasing.
Well, certainly there's been a lot of that ethos involved, yeah.
And I don't dispute that unequivocally because I have to say I'm not informed. I only ask the question if that was an actual conscious attempt at that sort of progress in our communications, or if it's just something that's happened. And I'll show my age a little bit here, mm-hmm. and that I have noticed that, you know, TV content, radio content, lyrics content, everything has changed. And I think that my main point, and then I'll have to listen to your response off the ear. My main point, I believe, is that I believe these things on the Internet, the content has evolved in many ways that are excellent, that show the better angels of human interactions, and in many ways in the other direction. And along the bell curve of social response, there are people on one side who would censor everything, and then people on the other end who just want anything out there no matter who is affected. And somewhere in the middle, I'll count myself, with a large amount of people who just say, we know something is offensive and hurtful and damaging to other human beings when we hear it or see it or read it.
But how or whether we draw those lines at all or where, if we draw them, big question there. Margie, I appreciate your call. Davey, Tim, let me take it to Neil Richards. He joins us from Brescia, Italy today, professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis, focuses on privacy law, freedom of speech, civil liberties, the Internet. His new book is Intellectual Privacy, Rethinking Civil Liberties in the Digital Age. Neil Richards in Italy, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to be back on, Tom.
What about this notion of something like full transparency or very robust transparency about life and all of its corners being baked into the very concept of the Internet and information flow there?
Well, I think like a lot of extreme ideas, it may have a sort of superficial appeal, but I don't think it's borne out by the evidence, right? The Internet, so I went to college in the 1990s, and, you know, the Internet we were promised then was one of radical expression, but also radical anonymity, right? The old New Yorker cartoon on the Internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
Yeah.
We've replaced that with a world of surveillance by governments, by corporations, by advertisers, and increasingly by hackers and doxers. We hear a lot that privacy is dead, and transparency is the new black, or that people or kids don't care about privacy. And I think that's false. Certainly much more information about humans is being transmitted through computers. There's a lot more processing of personal data going on. But, you know, we all live in opaque houses. We all wear opaque clothes. We close the bathroom door. We work in opaque buildings. We all intuitively want this line between the public and the private. And I think as a society, as society, I'm here in Italy at a privacy conference. They're struggling with the same sets of questions. We're struggling about how to draw that line, how to bring our commitments to freedom of speech, to privacy, to human dignity, to equality into the 21st century and into the digital society.
How do you do it when you have such disparate organizations collecting and disseminating information, sometimes not voluntarily? But here, just in the last week, we've got Reddit, we've got Gawker, we've got Ashley Madison. None of these, well, Gawker's the closest to a traditional media outlet. Reddit doesn't even pretend to be that. And Ashley Madison, well, they've been hacked, but here's all this data and not necessarily an ethic that says don't publish it. What do you do with a big basket of fish like that?
Well, it's a big, complicated situation, and I think we ultimately need a nuanced solution. I think Davey put it really well when she said a few minutes ago that outright censorship is the government blocking information everywhere. Reddit's moderation is not censorship any more than your moderation on this show, Tom, is censorship. I think that we need to have room for platforms, for communities, and Reddit is very much a community, figuring out what their community norms are. And the beauty of an online community is that unlike a physical community where if you don't like the norms, it's hard to leave, to sell your house, to get a new apartment, you can change communities much more rapidly online. You asked about a line. In terms of a line, I think the line is one where the one between ideas and behavior, the one that, you know, the great thing about the bricks and mortar society we grew up in and the digital society we have is that we can explore any idea, no matter how controversial, deviant, blasphemous, offensive, and that's a good thing. That's human freedom at its finest. The bad thing is we have these bad actors, and I think the one line that we can draw is one that is harassment and one that is stalking. It's one thing to say, that people should have more affairs, the way Ashley Madison does. It's quite another to hack into a computer system and to publish to harm people, or to maybe not to harm them, to blackmail them. These are in the offline world, we treat these as crimes, and I think we need to be thoughtful about bringing some of our protections, criminal protections and civil protections for human decency, for a good society.
But is that line so clear, Neil Richards? I mean, after all, on Reddit, some of these areas were about fat shaming or racism or transphobia. Now, you can call all of those ideas. You can say, it's just the idea that fat is bad, or that people have racist ideas. But those come very close to the line of harassment, don't they?
They do, and they're going to be hard questions because these are both values that we care about, right? We care about free expression, and we care about privacy, and we care about human dignity. But I think the line would be something like, when somebody breaks into a computer system and accesses somebody else's data and publishes that data on an archive or on the open web. That's a criminal act. There's no idea there. When it comes to discussion fora, I think that's if you've been docked, if your information is being exposed, if people are learning your secrets, whether they're true or not, changing platforms or even hiding from the internet is not going to stop you from being harmed. But when it comes to ideas, discussions of ideas that aren't attacks on individual people, that aren't the distribution of non-consensual pornography or these sorts of targeted individual harassment, then I think in the name of openness and free speech, it's important to let these ideas go. We might find them distasteful, but many of our most cherished ideas, the equality of all people regardless of race, sex, and sexual orientation, the fact that people should be in charge of the government and not the other way around, these were once deeply unpopular, subversive ideas that people quite literally died for. So I think it's important to protect individuals but allow discussion. And allow forums for discussion. But when things get personal, when things become harassing, when we have stalking, when we have individualized actions that really destroy someone's emotional state or destroy someone's life, particularly ordinary people, then I think the law should appropriately intervene.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about free speech, privacy, decency, and where the internet is headed after blow-ups at Reddit and Gawker and the hacking of Ashley Madison. Neil Richards is with us, professor of law at Washington University in St. Louis. His new book is Intellectual Privacy, Rethinking Civil Liberties in the Digital Age. Timothy Lee, Tim Lee, is with us. He covers technology for Vox, joins us from Washington. Davey Alba is with us from Wired Magazine, with us from San Francisco today. A lot of response online. Shag says, I'm not sure if individual privacy is on life support or in a coffin. Okay. Michael says, even in the face of decency and censorship, those dark, oozing, smelly parts of the internet will still exist. Hard to doubt that. And James says, I just joined Reddit, and I wonder sometimes if the critics have actually spent any time on the site. It's huge. And the number of subreddits or dedicated to Japanese anime alone outnumber the untasteful stuff 100 to 1. So fair enough. There's a lot out there. The issue is about at the edges. If there are edges, if there are boundaries, what should happen? Chris in New Orleans. Thanks for calling, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, folks. Thanks for letting me join the conversation. Just yes. Quick background. I've been in journalism for 30 years. Online, radio, broadcast, and a thing that used to be known as newspapers. You might have heard of them.
I have vague recollection.
I'm listening to the conversation, and the only word I caution about is censorship. That's a very incendiary term, and I don't really think that any of the examples being brought up are censorship. Gawker and Reddit are both either communities or businesses, and communities either have to grow, change, and evolve, or they become stagnant. And in the same way, like Gawker is a business, they have a product. And I look at this as a maturation of their product, a reaction to their marketplace, mm-hmm. their customers. I just think that just because we've become so desensitized, I don't believe anybody should feel that everything is a blank slate for them to air their views. Nobody's paying for the opportunity to put their views on Gawker or Reddit. I don't think it's a curtailment of freedom of speech.
But Chris, if I may, is it not possible that what you come out of newspapers, so do I, that what was old school editorial discretion is now seen by internet generation as, in fact, censorship? Let it all be out there.
Well, sure. Now, I mean, the fact is, look, I think the day that Gawker and Reddit come to some sense of enlightenment and decency and boundaries is a great day for the advancement of enlightenment in our larger community. I don't worry at all that nobody else will step into the howling void that is the digital echo chamber of the internet to air the views that are being curtailed in those places. Their businesses, very early on in the conversation, was the idea that Gawker's publishers had crossed that Chinese wall, as you speak. But I agree. I've never been in management. I've been on the other side for 30 years. I don't like anybody meddling in my product, but a publisher who's not paying attention and not taking some interest in the editorial product and stepping in when he has to is a publisher who's not going to be in business very long.
Chris, I appreciate your call from New Orleans very much. Davey Alba, of course, that move of the publisher, let's say in Gawker's case, publisher and founder, pretty essentially, Nick Denton, stepping in with editorial standards or intervention, that's exactly what had the editors in his organization up in arms.
Mm-hmm. No, it's totally true. And a lot of the debate kind of, you know, there is a still question that's hanging over, you know, everyone's head. Was the content of that article, you know, defensible? And that discussion, I think, has sort of veered into that more of that action of the publisher stepping in. And I think the discussion about the actual content of the piece is also an important one to have, for sure. And I hope it somehow gets back there too at some point.
Neil Richards, what about that? Let's look at the content here. So you've got an executive, a manager in a publishing company, and he goes to hire a gay escort. The gay escort apparently tries to blackmail him. The whole story comes out in Gawker. By your set of new standards for the internet, was Gawker wrong to publish that? Is that what you would call moving from ideas to the realm of behavior where it's out of bounds or not?
I don't think Gawker should be running stories like, as a matter of, you know, as an individual person, what I want to read, what I want the media to be doing. I don't really see what is advanced by that, other than people gawking at the story.
But that's their very name, and that's what you want.
Exactly. They chose their name intentionally, I think. I think what really matters ultimately, though, is the First Amendment. And that's when we do talk about censorship. And I think if you have, I think under the First Amendment, I think having just a culture of free speech is very important. But a culture of free speech means both protecting dissent and also exercising good judgment. And particularly gatekeepers like established media. And I think Gawker at this point is established media. That's very important. You know, it's interesting that the history that privacy law in America started in Boston when a socialite complained that her dinner parties were being published, or the guest lists were being published by an upstart rag. Mm. And that rag is now the Boston Globe. And so we've had this long discussion about what's appropriate and what's not in the press and in society. And I think rather than saying that privacy is on life support, I think we've been talking about the death of privacy, and I talk about this in the book, we've been talking about the death of privacy for 125 years. What we're really doing is we are managing how news works, how discussion works, how community works, as social norms and the economy and as technology change. And that discussion shows no signs of abating. That's really what we mean when we talk about privacy, is this the need for new rules, new norms, new ethics to govern how we talk about ourselves, how we interact with each other when we're talking about and interacting with each other.
Still, I wonder if it can really happen. Tim Lee, I mean, every technology sort of has its own demands. The internet makes the flow of information so pervasive that one wonders if it's possible to exercise judgment. And I still go back to those in the internet camp who might say, forget judgment. Transparency is what it's all about. It's all about. Get used to seeing more of human behavior exposed, because the internet exposes everything, and just get used to it.
Well, I think it's, again, important to remember that the internet is made up of individuals. So I think it is true that if somebody wants to put information out there, the architecture of the internet means that the rest of us are not likely to be able to stop that information from spreading. But it doesn't follow from that any particular publisher, and especially a prominent and powerful publisher like Gawker, is obligated or will inevitably publish everything. I mean, Gawker could have chosen not to publish that story. If they hadn't, it's not clear that anybody else would have, and maybe, you know, the world would never have found out about this, which I think would have been better for that particular executive and for everybody else. So I think there's a difference between whether individual publishers or people should publish things and whether the internet as a whole is going to be this free-wheeling kind of space. Mm.
Somehow, collectively, it all seems to end up out there. Bethany in Omaha, Nebraska. Bethany, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is in regards on a personal level when it comes to the internet. If you don't want something out there, don't put it on the internet. The basis of the internet isn't privacy. The basis of the internet is self-publication. And so if you don't want naked pictures of yourself out there, don't put them on Facebook. I'll take my...
Bethany, if I may, though, I mean, it's not all voluntary, right? You do business with almost any organization these days.
It's not all voluntary, but I'm saying on a personal mm-hmm. level. If you don't want information out there, don't put it on the internet.
Fair enough. While we acknowledge at the same time, it's pretty something. Certainly, you don't have to put up nudie pictures. But if you do business with almost anybody, you're going to have a lot of personal data. It's on the web. If it's hacked or somebody gets in there, it can certainly flow there. But point taken. One more. Knoxville, Tennessee. Cassidy, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I am getting my master's in emerging media through Loyola University, Maryland, and we discuss a lot about the ethics of what platforms decide to put online. I was wondering what you think, as emerging leaders, the responsibility is to the next generation to create this baseline of decency. Thank you.
To create a baseline of decency. Davey, are you prepared to articulate it, stand by it, defend it, enforce it, or will you be run out of town?
Well, I mean, I think that it is important to acknowledge that, you know, these platforms represent like almost like mini communities of the internet. Reddit can enforce their own, you know, rules. Gawker had, we hope they would have editorial standards for what they publish. And, you know, so it's sort of like the responsibility of these platforms to figure out where the lines are. Other than that, you know, especially with Reddit, it's I do see that it's a lot of the good and the bad on the internet itself. You know, one thing about Reddit that's really interesting is, you know, the anonymity part of it is, I think, almost important to the spreading of interesting ideas. A lot of people have called for, you know, if we could just attach names to the users, then a lot of the, you know,
trolling,
ideas
really
that they would,
right, stuff
exactly,
might be reined in.
You would be held responsible for that, accountable for that publicly. On the other hand, there are some really interesting discussions going on. One person I spoke to for a story, Nate Matthias over at the MIT Media Lab, pointed out that, you know, there are some communities where people have questions. For instance, there's this community where, you know, you kind of are not sure whether you're acting in a bad way or not, and you can kind of describe a situation and have other users come in and tell you what they think about your behavior.
Sounds like Dear Abby, that super chic, brand new technology from 100 years ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly, except it's on Reddit.
Yeah.
and, you know, those types of things, you know, when you're not sure or you aren't so willing to put your whole self out there, that's also important. And we need to kind of make way for spaces for that kind of conversation. I think that's really, you know, as a society, one of the values that we can bring into, you know, just these spaces where you can ask questions and maybe figure out what is okay. And we're all struggling with this question, you know.
But with that, we seem to go away again from the baseline of decency, more toward the transparency and the fullness of human nature, and it will emerge and give people ways to talk about even the difficult stuff here, even if those groups that have editors or overseers try to exercise that some sort of baseline decency. Well, I mean, where's the bottom here for the web? It's so big. Andrew, Auburn, Alabama. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, really, what I wanted to say was that when you're trying, I believe that it's difficult to apply censorship, a physical world type of censorship, to a digital world like the internet. It's sort of like a hydra. If you cut one off with censorship at one website or one forum, another one's going to pop up. And for instance, with Reddit, if they were to try to censor some of the negative content as it sees it, then you have other forums to go to. A lot of Reddit users use websites like 4chan, which is a very black part of the internet, a very dark, dark, dark part of the internet. And I don't feel like if you apply censorship to one, you're gonna do anything. Like I said, it's like a hydra. You cut one off, two more grow in its place. And that's kind of just my point on it.
So there's no way to draw a baseline. Neil Richards, what about it? I mean, where would you even draw that line? The internet's so vast.
I think this discussion that we are having right now is the process of drawing that line, not just the four of us, but everybody. It's like the discussion we had a couple of weeks ago about you know, whether Confederate flags belong on state houses. Right? What is the appropriate line for that? And it's a difficult process. But let me say this about the don't put it out there argument. I agree with what Davey said, but I'd even push harder on the argument. You cannot live your life in a connected world, particularly if you're under 30, without being out there in a meaningful sense, right? There's all sorts of professional and social obligations to be engaged with social networks. We're starting to see devices with microphones, televisions, Bluetooth players in our homes. Digital personal assistants, robots are around the corner. We're going to have a networked world, and I think we need to stop thinking about the internet as a different place. The internet is people using technology, and people are going to do good things and people are going to do bad things. It's the old problem of policing a society so we have a community that is safe and good and decent, but also one in which people are free to express themselves. It's really, really hard work, but it's important work, and the great thing is we're talking about it, and that's the first step to figuring out what those norms should be and how we can take our cherished values of privacy, speech, equality, liberty, and translate them into digital formats. And I would also say we need to have better security. I think things like hacks are made easier easier by lack security by companies, by consumers that maybe aren't as educated as they could be, and also by companies who try to make it frictionless to do things and to connect and to log in online, and maybe don't use things like encryption or data limitation or really make good on the commitments to privacy that they articulate in their privacy policies and marketing.
Tim, maybe in some organic way, the business pressures on these particularly successful internet sites, Reddit, Gawker, will be part of reining things in. For better or for worse, from an internet purist perspective, they want to sell ads. Advertisers don't want to be up against just any kind of horrible content. Maybe that's where part of the organic pressure comes from.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And that's not really new, right? If you think about the highest the highest subscription magazines or newspapers or television shows, they tended to be a little bit safer than, you know, if you went to some kind of independent bookstore, you might find edgier magazines or, you know, video stores might have G-rated and R-rated content. So I think you're going to see the same thing on the internet. The sites that have the broadest reach and the largest audience are going to be a little bit tamer than the stuff that's more of a niche audience.
Well, we may have a chance to find out more in the days ahead. Ashley Madison says they've got all that data back under control. If not, it could start showing up in very interesting places parallel to the whole Gawker story. And soon we'll see. Reddit, Gawker, all the rest, we'll follow, we'll watch. The future will write itself right in front of our eyes. I'm very grateful to all three of you for helping us look into this today. Neil Richards, author of the new book, Intellectual Privacy. Neil, thanks for joining us.
Thanks again, Tom.
Timothy Lee at Vox, covering technology there, joining us from Washington. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tom.
And Davey Alba in San Francisco, staff writer for Wired. Davey, you're great. Come again. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.